think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 292 of Low Limit Football on this 2nd of August, 2020. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, all five leagues are now concluded as the Serie A crosses the finish line. Ciro Immobile ties Gonzalo Higuain's league goal-scoring record on his way to Europe's Golden Shoe, and Juve are crowned champions by 1 point over Inter. MLS is back, sees a massive upset as LAFC are eliminated in the quarterfinals on penalties by Orlando City. Minnesota, Portland, and Philadelphia make up your semifinalists with a CONCACAF Champions League spot on the line. And Champions League and Europa League return this week to complete the 2020 tournament. We'll discuss that and more with special guest Carlo Ganganese, Italian football expert, who will be joining us in just a little bit. But first, let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
Good, good, good. Getting ready to go on vacation, my friend. Getting ready. Finally. Now you need a break. It's been a year since I've been on vacation.
It's quite a long time, and trust me, this year has felt like 10 years all in one, so
I know.
You definitely deserve it.
I know. I don't even know if it's August or it's Tuesday or if it's winter. You have no idea anymore. It's just,
and no,
this,
today is October 16th. We're recording at around 4 in the morning, I think.
It sounds like that. It feels like that for sure. Definitely our brains are all kind of messed up here. But we're going to finally conclude the 19-20 season here. With the Champions League starting back up this week, Europa League starting back up this week, and then we're going to have a transfer window that is going to be tiny, but probably going to be active, and then we're going to start the 2021 season, man, which is crazy, but this year is just flying by like crazy. So let's jump into it, because we had a great interview with Carlo Ganganese that we talked to just a little while ago, and we're going to get to that in just a little bit, but you know, I know we have trivia. I know it's going to be your honor. We're going to do some opening thoughts, and we've got a great show planned. So without further ado, my friend, if you want to hit me with the trivia question.
Okay, so I need you to give me two answers on this one, so okay. No pressure. Mm-hmm. AC Milan, with their 35 goals, have the most goals since the restart in all of the top five leagues in Europe. Can you name the other two who make up that top three?
Wow, 35 goals. And who's the other? Okay, so I'm gonna write down two teams, but I think I think it's kind of a trick question, to be honest with you, because one of the things that credit AC Milan is the fact that they had so many matches. So I think there's very good potential that this could be two Serie A teams that are the answer to this question, just because of the amount of matches played to close out the season off the break. So. But that is a great question, and we will get you the answer to that in just a little bit. So let's hit opening thoughts, Rob, tonight. And opening thoughts are really kind of generated off of the FA Cup final. Obviously, Arsenal with a 2-1 victory over Chelsea in the FA Cup final. But the key there was really the play of Christian Pulisic, where scored the goal, you know, had a massive impact on the match, but then pulls up with a huge hamstring injury to the point where we don't know the extent of that injury. It does look like he will not be available for the leg against Bayern Munich. Not that it would have helped much, because Bayern carry a 3-0 lead into the second leg of that one, and Bayern, by all accounts, is, you know, if not the best team in world football right now, one of the best teams. So we wanted to talk about Pulisic from the North American standpoint. Obviously, many have dubbed him Captain America. He is certainly, I think without argument, the best American player on the pitch right now in any and all leagues. And I don't know that that's even debatable. The question that I posed to you, Rob, and something that I was giving some thought, is he the best player in North America? And when you ask that question, we have to ask our, you know, really it becomes a USA versus Mexico battle. But there are a couple of outlying players. There's one that comes to mind at Bayern Munich that, you know, we'll talk about in a moment. But, you know, your opinion, Rob, given the talent that's in Mexico right now, especially the young talent, there are plenty of names we can throw at each other. Given the up-and-coming teams or players that we have coming out of Canada, and specifically Alphonso Davies, is Christian Pulisic the best footballer in North America right now?
You know, it's been a debate that has been going on for quite some time. I think we could obviously go into the Alphonso Davies, which obviously is the player that you had mentioned from Canada, playing for Bayern Munich. I think that argument is up there. I mean, certainly those two have become the top players that are from North America that have been performing in the top five leagues, like I said, the best leagues in the world at the moment. I mean, if you really wanted to go for a third name, I mean, you have Raul Jimenez, who has been performing exceptionally well at Wolves lately. So it's really tough to see. I mean, I think when you compare both the players, and I think it's very difficult anyway, because one is obviously a forward and the other is a defender. Mm-hmm. So it really is difficult on how you want to rate them in terms of, and how do you value their importance. I think because of sheer consistency in terms of, one, performing on a better team, I think you could still make the argument that Davies is better than Pulisic in terms of how he has helped his team. Obviously, the form of Bayern Munich has been largely contributed to, obviously, the performances of Robert Lewandowski, but I think it's overall team. I think when you look at Chelsea, for example, I mean, yes, Pulisic, we can obviously be very happy that he's performed very well on a Chelsea side. Obviously, finished fourth and finished runners-up in the FA Cup, and he's obviously been a vital player. But at the same time, is that enough to value him as a top player right now over Davies? I mean, it's a flip of a coin, I would say. I think if we had made this argument a couple months ago, we would say, yes, Davies is the best. But now looking at what Pulisic is doing, you're thinking, okay, maybe there is that kind of neck-and-neck competition. However, I think because of sheer experience and in terms of how he's already done stuff at Borussia Dortmund beforehand and now at Chelsea, I would still go into Pulisic right now because of what he brings to the table for the team. I think Davies is still obviously a very great player and still an important player for Bayern, but I think he's still underneath the amount of players that are above him in terms of big sheer importance. You know, the likes of a Robert Lewandowski, a Thomas Muller, Serge Gnabry, you know. A Thiago, even a Manuel Neuer or Joshua Kimmich. I mean, you have those players that perhaps have been on a similar scale of what Davies has done in terms of importance. I think for Chelsea, you know, you still have a shaky defense. The goalkeeper situation is not as good as well. I mean, obviously you have really great young players that are coming up, and obviously with players now coming in with the likes of a Timo Werner and a Hakim Ziyech. There is that sort of argument being made, but I think in terms of what he brings more to the table and how much experience that he brings, I think I still would have to venture Pulisic as probably the best American North American player right now in the world.
I kind of agree with you. You know, I was thinking about that from the supporting cast standpoint, just like you pointed out, and the players that surround Davies. And again, it's tough to compare them, you know, directly, because they play two different spots, although there are similarities in where they play on the pitch, given you that they go up and down that left side for the most part.
There are similarities there, but I think the idea of the consistency of the Bayern Munich side, the consistency of the players on that pitch versus the consistency of, or the lack of consistency on the Chelsea side, like you pointed out with the defense that has not been quite as good. Kepa has been atrocious to the point where he found his way to the bench in the FA Cup final. You know, it leads you to believe that Pulisic would be the better one. Very easy to compare them on age. Pulisic is going to be 22 in September. Davies is going to be 20 in November. So I think, you know, age-wise, we're looking at, you know, direct similarities. You brought up Raul Jimenez. Jimenez is a person, he's 29 years old, so obviously much older, but certainly having a fantastic season playing for Wolves. Names that we would have brought out months ago would be guys like Tecatito Corona, who is, currently, I'm just trying to look, I think he's at... I had it up here a minute ago, and he is currently playing at Porto. Chucky Lozano is definitely a name that you would have thrown into this mix maybe even a year ago. Now he's at Napoli, but has kind of fallen out of favor. And even on the weekend, we didn't see a ton out of him, and you don't know if he's going to remain at Napoli or if he's going to move on because he just hasn't been getting the playing time that he expected there. So I think when you look at, and even the players on the U.S. men's national team, you know, we talk about guys like, Weston McKennie, who's had a very good season at Schalke, although Schalke as a whole did not perform well. These are players that I would also incorporate into the mix. But I think when you look at the consistency of the teams that surround them, I think it benefits Alphonso Davies a little bit more. I also think that Pulisic has overcome a lot of that given his performances, especially in recent weeks at Chelsea, where he's just been absolutely fantastic. It's going to be interesting to see, Rob, when they come back into the 2021 season and when they get into that first international break, if it happens in October, to see how these players perform on their national teams, because the argument would be made at that point that the surrounding cast for Pulisic compared to the surrounding cast for Davies would be much, much better. The American team as a whole is far more talented than the Canadian team as a whole. And it's going to be interesting to see how well does Davies perform in that setting, okay, where he has to be the leader and the man, versus where Pulisic technically should have a little better support from his surrounding cast on the American national team in comparison. How do they look then? Do they look like they're still world beaters? Do they look like they're still some of the top young talent in the world? Which at this point we would have to say yes, they are. These are going to be interesting questions that need to get answered on that stage. And I think it's more important for Canada to answer that question, or Davies to answer that question for Canada, because I think Alphonso Davies is going to be the extent of the talent. I mean, there are other talented players on the Canadian national team, but I think he is leaps and bounds ahead of many of those players, where Pulisic is ahead of many of the players on the American team, but not quite. We've seen the emergence of Gio Reyna and that sort of player as well. So we're going to get, a different view of these players once they hit their national teams. I'd like to see that. And I'd like to see how that affects their player, what that translates into for them. And I know there are a lot of other variables we could talk about. There's coaching that's going to be an issue, that sort of thing. But I think from there, I think once we see them perform, that would be the one of the litmus tests for those two players. I think, though, Rob, let me ask you this. Given these two players that we focused on, Davies and Pulisic, of course, would you put any of the Mexican teams in the same ball or in the same ballpark? You know, would you put Jimenez in the same ballpark? Or do you think Jimenez is a guy that might be just a step behind? Is there anyone else that we want to put on this list?
I think if we're talking about players that are being based in Europe, I think we still have to put in Jimenez because of, okay, he's obviously a bit older than both Davies and Pulisic, but he's still a consistent player, and he saw that at Wolves. I think in terms of effectiveness for a team, I think you still have to give those two players the benefit of the doubt. I mean, Jimenez is definitely up there, but I would still perhaps, personally, I think he is the best player in Mexico right now. I think he's the best Mexican player in the world right now. So it perhaps gives much more of an advantage, though, for a player like Pulisic and Davies right now in terms of how they've seen themselves as the best players from their nations. Mm-hmm. So that's how I personally see it. So
I completely agree. I think Jimenez is absolutely the best Mexican player right now. I think that could change given if Lozano either A, gets out of Napoli, or B, gets used more frequently in a way that, you know, Gattuso can incorporate his talents, because he's ultra, ultra talented. But I think Lozano would be the other player that I would focus on. I think in terms of like a player like Chicharito, I think the game has passed him by at this point. I think he's, you know, he's into his swan song at the LA Galaxy. But at this point, I would not put him up there. And for me, if I had to start two strikers on the Mexican national team, even though I know they don't play that way, I would be more inclined to start Jimenez and Lozano over Chicharito personally, because I think that's where the talent lies. You know, in terms of the Mexican national team. And I think that's a bright future. I mean, you know, Jimenez, 29, still has a couple more years left in him. Lozano, 25. So he's still quite young. And I think that if he gets either A, his playing time at Napoli, or B, moved on to a team that will utilize him a little better, I think you might see Lozano make that next step and maybe throw his name into this conversation somewhere down the road for sure. So, Rob, let's table that conversation and let's get to our interview with Carlo. We had the absolute pleasure of having Carlo Ganganese on the show to talk about all things Champions League. We got into Ciro Immobile as well, and we had a great, great conversation with him. So without further ado, the Carlo Ganganese interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football, Italian football expert Carlo Ganganese. Carlo, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you on tonight. I want to open with looking ahead to the Champions League, especially given that the Serie A season has closed. Juve return as champions for the 9th straight time. However, they've kind of limped into the end of this season. They did not look well closing the season out. They definitely did not look well against Roma, even though it was a weakened side, to say the least. But going into a Lyon side that played very, very tightly in the Coupe de la Ligue against PSG, going to penalties and eventually losing that one, this does not set up well for Juve at the moment, especially given the concerns of the Paulo Dybala injury. They're going to be without Douglas Costa. It just doesn't set up as well as you would have expected it to set up. What's your impression of Juve closing the season and looking forward to their matchup coming up at the end of the week against Lyon?
Yeah, I don't have too much confidence for Juventus, to be honest with you. I mean, you mentioned there that Juventus have finished the season very badly. In fact, they've lost 3 of their last 4 matches and they've won only 2 of their last 8 games, and they conceded 17 goals during those 8 games. So yes, their form going into this match is terrible. But, you know, that's kind of been a microcosm in a way of Juventus's whole season. I mean, Juventus have underwhelmed all season. I mean, I'm sort of kind of surprised still that they actually won the title playing so badly, really, all season. This is not a great Juventus team. This is not a vintage Juventus team. I would almost go as far to say that this is one of the weakest Serie A champions that, you know, I can ever remember, you know, in history, really. I mean, statistically, yes, they're champions, but they conceded 43 goals this season, which is almost unheard of for a Serie A champion. In fact, in the history of Serie A, it's the second most amount of goals that a Serie A champion has conceded. In 1958, which was also Juventus, is the only other season that that a team's conceded more. They conceded 44 that. So, I mean, it's an incredible number of goals. The defence is shaky. The midfield is had problems for a few years. The fullbacks are weak. The depth isn't really there. There's really Juventus have relied all season on not the team, but on individual moments of genius, really, from Ronaldo and from Paulo Dybala. They're the ones that have got them out of jail. I'm not really that confident. As you mentioned, they've got injuries going into this game. Costa's out. Dybala very unlikely to play. So, I'm not that confident. I think the only thing they've really got going for them going into this second leg is that Lyon have only played one competitive game, which you mentioned. So their match fitness is not going to be great. But like you said, they actually played pretty well against PSG, given the circumstances. They conceded very little. Remember, Juventus have to overturn a 1-0. And Juventus haven't won too many games this season by more than a goal. So, So yeah, I mean, I'm sure with the bookmakers, Juventus will be favourites in this tie, but, you know, I wouldn't be putting any big money on them, if you know, that's for sure.
Now, Carlo, looking into the next matchup for the Italian teams in the round of 16, we got Napoli against Barcelona. I think this is a very interesting tie because, obviously, the first leg ended 1-1 at the São Paulo, and given how both the teams' seasons have become ever since the restart, I mean, Napoli ended up winning Coppa Italia on penalties over Juventus, ironically. I believe they lost three games ever since the restart, and that was against Atalanta, Parma, and Inter. So it's been kind of a roller coaster ride, but you could also say that for Barcelona, who, you know, had been also a bit inconsistent and obviously falling second to a really good Real Madrid side. I mean, how do you rate Napoli's chances heading into the second leg of the Camp Nou? I mean, is there a significant chance that, let's be fair, maybe this will be a surprise for them, but, you know, can Napoli end up getting a big result and advancing to the quarterfinals at the disposal of Barcelona?
I think they'll give them a game. I really do. I think when the draw was made, you know, back in December, which feels like a lifetime ago now, you know, you wouldn't find a single person in the world that would have given Napoli a prayer in this tie against Barca, because, you know, Napoli were in complete disarray and Barca were going reasonably well under a previous coach. But, you know, a lot has changed since then. And, you know, Rino Gattuso, who replaced Carlo Ancelotti and, you know, inherited a situation where the club was in complete civil war, you know, has done an amazing job. And Napoli have really turned around their season, and they won the Coppa Italia. And their record, Napoli's record against the big teams this season, but especially under Gattuso in 2020, has been fantastic. I mean, Napoli have beaten Juventus, they've beaten Inter, they've beaten Roma, they've beaten Lazio twice. They drew with Barca in the first leg, a game which Napoli really deserved to win. And, you know, they won the Coppa Italia, as I mentioned. So they won't be overawed by playing against Barcelona, that's for sure. If anything, they'll raise their games, because as they've shown in these big games. You know, their recent form's been, as you mentioned, has been a little bit up and down, but I think that's more down to the fact that really, since winning the Coppa Italia at the start of the restart from the coronavirus, they've had nothing to play for, because the Champions League position through the league was already out of the question when Gattuso took over, and they'd won the Coppa Italia to put their place in the Europa League. So they've really had nothing to play for during this restart, but they've still been playing, you know, strong lineups. They've still been, you know, quite intense. Gattuso's been experimenting a little bit tactically. I mean, if you watch the first leg against Barcelona, Napoli played very, very defensive counter-attacking football. They were very deep in their own box. It was almost bordering on Catenaccio, really. It was that deep, the back line. Since then, he's been experimented more in pushing them forward, playing more of a deep, higher line, more attacking, more expressive. And I think he's done well, Gattuso, because he laid the foundations with the defence, sorted out the defence. And now that the defence has been sorted, he's been a little bit more adventurous. And I think that will bode well for them going into this Barca game, because they can't be as defensive as they were in the first leg. They need to come out and score at least one away goal. So yeah, I think they've got a chance. That a lot will be riding on the injury to Lorenzo Insigne. He went off in tears at the end of the game on Saturday against Lazio with a muscular problem, and he's so crucial for Napoli. So a lot will be riding on him. But, you know, as you mentioned yourself, there, Rob, I mean, Barca have got a lot of problems themselves, both, you know, on and off the pitch. And I would say that they're a little bit comparable to Juventus in that they're an aging team. They're quite slow. The midfield is not that great. They've got no width. They're totally reliant, like Juventus are on Ronaldo and Dybala, they're totally reliant on on the individual genius of Messi. And, you know, off the pitch, I don't think it's a happy camp. You know, the new manager, Setien, who's come in, hasn't really done it. Players don't seem to trust him. Everyone seems to hate the president, Bartomeu. You know, there's a constitutional crisis there. And, you know, they've got some problems in midfield as well. You know, Vidal and Busquets are both suspended. Arthur is refusing to play. De Jong's only just come back from injury recently, and I don't think he'll be at his peak. Sergi Roberto is probably going to be drafted into midfield. So Barca have problems as well. I think this is a fascinating tie. If anything, I think this is the most fascinating out of the four remaining games in the last 16, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Definitely, and actually, it's great that you said such a thing, because there's also another tie that I think is very interesting. I think all three of us can really agree on that as well, is the one that will be happening on Friday, right next to Juventus-Lyon, is Manchester City-Real Madrid. You know, heading into the second leg in Manchester, Man City holding a 2-1 away lead towards Real Madrid. Obviously, both sides have also had different sorts of seasons ever since the restart. Real Madrid had come in full force, winning La Liga in a really competitive race. Manchester City, although they didn't win the Premier League and, you know, got eliminated from the FA Cup to eventual winners Arsenal, they were still very, very competitive and scoring goals for fun. I mean, when you look at both the sides that both Pep Guardiola and Zinedine Zidane had, this makes this tie very, very interesting on the basis of, like, you know, the talent that they have, the depth as well. And I think that's going to be a big factor heading into the second leg. I mean, Carlo, how do you assess this second leg going back to Manchester between these two teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think that everybody seemed to assume that the tie was over once City won 2-1 in Madrid. But as time's worn on, and obviously Madrid have won La Liga, I think a lot more people are saying, well, actually, you know, it's not over. And we've seen so often, you know, I mean, if we go back to the Champions League last season, we saw teams that were overturning. I mean, Real Madrid themselves went out after winning 2-1 away against Ajax and then losing at home. So, you know, yes, the two away goals for City are huge, but it's definitely not over. I mean, Madrid have, you know, they've won the league. They've got a lot of confidence. My one concern for Madrid would probably be that Sergio Ramos is suspended. And, you know, Madrid have been... Whenever he hasn't played in knockout ties in recent seasons, Madrid have been a disaster. I mean, their defence is so reliant. I mean, you know, yes, their defence has been great in La Liga. I mean, even better than Atletico Madrid, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But once Ramos is not there, they seem to struggle. So that's my concern for Madrid. But I think if they can get the first goal in this tie, then it's definitely game on. But I'm going to still favour Man City, because I think that, you know, they score so many goals and they're going to be attacking a defence without Sergio Ramos. And I just think that really City have been, all season, this has been their focus, the Champions League. I mean, it's no secret that it's their dream to win the Champions League, a bit like PSG. And, you know, they've lost a lot of games in the Premier League this season. I think 9, which is a crazy amount of games for a team as good as Man City. But I kind of wonder how much of that is down to the fact that they've been a little bit more focused on the Champions League all season. So, you know, it's again, very fascinating tie. Definitely not over, but I'm still... My money's still with Man City to go through in this one.
Definitely. And obviously we have one more game to mention, and I think it's the one that perhaps is all but done and dusted. And even if you look at what could happen, I think we have to mention it. Bayern against Chelsea. Bayern holding a 3-0 lead heading into the second leg. Back at home in Munich. I mean, there you can really ride into the confidence that Bayern have, and rightly so, perhaps being one of the best on-form teams in the world. And a Chelsea side who, you know, at the time of this recording, have come from losing the FA Cup final and obviously coming from a big injury now with the absence of Christian Pulisic. I mean, looking at how Bayern has been playing, Carlo, I mean, can you really say that right now on the terms of form that they are the best team in the world and perhaps the favorites now to win the Champions League?
Yeah, I think so. They're my favourites, definitely. I think that I've said for quite a number of months now that I don't see past Bayern Munich or Manchester City for the Champions League. Obviously, the way that the draw's worked out now, only one of those teams is going to get to the final. But I think that those two teams, Bayern and Manchester City, are a step ahead of the rest in Europe by quite a distance, I would say. But, you know, because the format of the Champions League has changed, and we're moving into such an unknown territory, games close together, one leg from the quarterfinals onwards instead of two legs. And when you play a one-off game, you know, anything can happen. The best team doesn't always win in one-off matches. We've seen that in, you know, international tournaments. So for that reason, you can never say never to any team overturning or winning a one-off game. But one thing I can say absolutely 100% is there's not a hope in hell of Chelsea overturning this 3-0. I mean, one, Bayern are too good. Two, Chelsea are still building, and we saw in the FA Cup final, their defence isn't great. I mean, I would go as far as to say that Chelsea need a whole new defence, really, next season if they want to kind of be challenging for, say, the Premier League or in Europe. I don't think that the defence is strong enough. Zuma, Rudiger, Christensen, none of them are strong enough in the centre of defence. I can see Bayern racking up another three, even four goals in this second leg. And I mean, excuse me, Chelsea have got a lot of players out as well. I mean, they've got suspensions. Jorginho's out. I think Marcos Alonso's out. But I think both of those are suspended. You mentioned the injury to Christian Pulisic, and Azpilicueta got injured as well. Pedro got injured. I think all three of those will be out against Bayern. So Chelsea have got a lot of injury problems as well. So there was already no chance of them overturning the 3-0. But with all those players out and with just how good Bayern are, I fear for them. I can see if Bayern want to, I can see them, you know, an absolute hammering on aggregate here.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you on that one. And finally, we have to mention a little achievement. Well, not little, but a great achievement that we saw over the weekend, and that is Ciro Immobile. You know, performing well for a Lazio side that had done well in Serie A this season. But I think we have to talk about him winning the European Golden Shoe for the first time in his career, and also tying the all-time record for most goals in a Serie A season with his Capocannonieri 36 goals to tie Gonzalo Higuain's all-time record. I mean, this is a remarkable achievement for a player that has been just so vital for Lazio over the last few years. I mean, looking, just, you know, talking about this achievement, you know, how big is it really? I mean, he's the first Italian to do it since Francesco Totti in 2007. And I would even agree that given the form that he's been on, that he's one of the top 10 players in the world right now. I mean, what do you think about this achievement, Carlo?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's an incredible achievement. I mean, you know, 36 goals, European Golden Shoe winner, tying the record, as you said. I mean, those are historic achievements. And yes, I mean, 14 of them were penalties, and a lot of people have pointed that out. But still, still the number of goals he scored this season, I mean, amazing. And, you know, he led Lazio's Scudetto charge for so long this season, and I think Lazio and Immobile will always be, you know, wondering what could have happened if there wasn't the coronavirus outbreak. You know, would Lazio have won the Scudetto? That they, you know, they very well might have done, and if they had done, then, you know, who knows? You know, Immobile might have even been up for the Ballon d'Or. I know it's been cancelled now, so. So, yeah, it's an incredible achievement, and it's a strange one with Immobile because, and I'm as guilty as anyone for this, his achievements, as you mentioned, over the last few years, he scored so many goals, and he scored over 100 goals just in the last 100 Serie A goals just in the last 4 years alone. I mean, those are numbers that, you know, they're almost up with, you know, the likes of Messi and Ronaldo when they were at their very peak. He scored an incredible number of goals. He doesn't really get the respect that, you know, maybe he, and I know a lot of Lazio fans, think that he deserves. There's still this kind of feeling of mistrust around Immobile, that he's a player that, yes, he can score goals galore for Lazio, or earlier in his career for an even smaller team in Torino. But when he, you know, he's not really got the game or the variety to his game to perform for one of the real elite teams. And if I'm honest, I still have my question marks over Immobile, whether if he was to go to one of the elite teams in Europe, if he was to go to a Barcelona or a Madrid, you know, a Manchester City, a Juventus, a Bayern Munich, would he perform? Does he have the game for it? I'm not convinced he does. I think he's someone who flourishes in the Lazio system. They play for him. Everything's set up nicely for him. But whether he's complete enough, whether he has the ability to beat players, to play with his back to goal, to play in different tactical systems, I'm not sure. You know, he's 30 now. So that's my only question mark. But, you know, it doesn't matter now. You know, we need to just celebrate his achievement yesterday. It's an incredible achievement. And, you know, well done to him.
We did run a poll on our Twitter handle about where people would felt where Ciro Immobile would finish in the Ballon d'Or voting, assuming he would break Higuain's record. And of course, he tied it. And the winner was actually in the top 10. 33.8% of the people polled said he would finish in the top 10. 33.3% said he would finish in the top 5. So somewhere in that 5th to 10th place spot, I think, is where the majority of the public feel that he would finish as the Ballon d'Or voting would go. I think many would say that Robert Lewandowski would probably win it ultimately, and Messi would be up there as well because of him returning a 2020 season for the first time since Thierry Henry did it. Amazing seasons by both of those players, and Immobile's tying that record is just, you know, it's been a great season of football for sure. I want to turn back to the Champions League a little bit, and I want to look at the quarterfinal matchups because we do have two of those set up. We do, and I want to start at Atalanta PSG. Obviously, you know, I know Rob and I have talked about this. We're going to be somewhat robbed because Kylian Mbappe is not going to make the match due to his ankle injury that he suffered in the Coupe de France. We also have Josip Iličić, who has left the team for personal reasons. How does this pan out, and what do you see, Carlo, from this matchup, given these two teams, especially their high attacking, high profile, even though that attacking was held in check by Lyon in the Coupe de la Ligue? What do you see these two teams doing for this competition?
Well, yeah, it's another fascinating tie. I mean, it's the rich versus the poor, isn't it? The ultimate battle of rich v poor. I mean, you've got the billions, the trillions of the state of Qatar versus this, you know, tiny provincial, almost fairy tale team. I mean, I think Neymar earns more on his own than the entire Atalanta team or Atalanta squad does as a whole. So, I mean, it would be a beautiful story, obviously, if Atalanta could win. But, you know, it's a tie which I think both teams will fancy their chances in. I think from PSG's point of view, it's obviously their dream. As I said before, to win the Champions League. That's why they've been spending all this money on Neymar, on Mbappe. And, you know, they couldn't have asked for a better route to the final than they've been given this season with, you know, Atalanta and then potentially Leipzig or Atletico Madrid in the semis. I mean, they can't complain if they go out. From Atalanta's point of view, I mean, they score so many goals. They're so ultra-attacking. I mean, they've broken all kinds of scoring records this season. 98 goals in Serie A. I mean, that's the most goals scored in Serie A for almost 70 years. I mean, it's crazy. The one thing against Atalanta, I would say, is they have shown a bit of tiredness in recent games. I mean, since they beat Brescia 6-2, the five games since then, they've scored five goals in, which is unheard of for Atalanta, the number of goals they score. I think that they'll get a 10-day rest now before the PSG game, and that will be important for them to recuperate their energy. So the fitness side of things will be important going into this game, because, I mean, on PSG are on completely the other end of the scale in that they've only played two competitive games since the coronavirus pandemic broke. And both those are French Cup finals. I watched both games against the Saint-Étienne, which they won 1-0, and then against Lyon, which they won on penalties after a 0-0. And to be honest with you, I wasn't majorly impressed with them in either game, but particularly in the Lyon game, where I think they looked very slow, very uninspiring, and really missing Mbappe in that game against Lyon, just somebody that had that turn of pace that could stretch the game. They looked very, very, very slow. And against Atalanta are a team that, assuming they're back to their usual energy levels, they're a team that press so ferociously and they so much energy, and they just don't give you a second to breathe. And PSG looking that lackluster, I think definitely will be an advantage for Atalanta. So if Mbappe is out, I mean, he's expected to be out, although there are reports today on Sunday in L'Equipe and in a couple of the other French papers that there is actually a chance that he could even make a miracle recovery. So we'll have to wait and see on that. I think that if he is out, it definitely takes so much out of PSG's game. And for that reason, I'm almost inclined to go with Atalanta for this. But it's one that both teams will really fancy their chances in, I think.
You know, given also the fact that this is a single leg tournament at this point in the quarterfinals, what does a single leg, who does that favor? Does it favor Atalanta in your opinion? Or does it favor PSG in your opinion?
It's hard to say really, because I mean, from Atalanta's point of view, I mean, I've pretty much watched every single game of theirs this season in full. I love them. I just absolutely love with the way they play. They score so many goals, Atalanta, that you're almost thinking in a two-legged game, you know they're going to go away and they're going to score away goals. So can you outscore Atalanta over two games? Or I don't know. It's impossible to say. It's really, really difficult to answer that one. I mean, the one thing I would say about Atalanta is they fear no one. And what often happens in cup football in one-off games is that you get a certain type of team or certain types of players that seem to handle the one-off occasion better than others. Often it's kind of the technical players that can handle these kind of games really well. But obviously there is definitely a mental side to it. And Atalanta just don't fear anyone. They just go. It doesn't matter who they're playing. They play their game. They attack you. So I don't see Atalanta being overawed. I think there's definitely more pressure on PSG than there is on Atalanta, because they're expected to win this game. You know, they got given the draw, you know, other than Leipzig, that pretty much everyone would have wanted to get in terms of, you know, on paper. So, you know, maybe it does benefit Atalanta a little bit, but you know, you could argue it either way, to be honest with you.
No, I agree completely. Last matchup in the quarterfinals, RB Leipzig versus Athletic. And from the RB Leipzig standpoint, the good news is that this team returns pretty much a fully healthy team compared to the team that had to play Tottenham Hotspur under massive stress and injury and still performed incredibly well under, you know, against Spurs. But they will go into this match possibly one of the better defensive teams in all of Europe without their top striker, Timo Werner, who has since moved on to Chelsea but won't be eligible to play for them until the new season. This is kind of a bad situation for Leipzig, in my opinion, because when you lose a player of Timo Werner's quality and caliber, where are you going to find those goals, I think, is the big question for them. Patrick Schick has performed well for them, you know, in the run down to the end of the season for the Bundesliga. But I've got a favor Atleti in this one. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, definitely agree. I think that Atletico are quite significant favorites for me for this, because they've got the experience there that Leipzig don't have. I mean, Leipzig are first-time quarter-finalists, whereas Atletico Madrid, I mean, under Simeone, I mean, they get into this stage pretty much almost every single season, and they, you know, they reach two finals, and they might even feel that it's destiny for them this season. Like all the teams on their side of the draw, you know, they've got the dream side of the draw in terms of a route to the final, and you know, Atletico are in very good form. They've they haven't lost for, I think they're unbeaten. They are unbeaten. You'll know they're unbeaten during lockdown, I'm pretty sure. And you know, they really are finding form in the right stage, and winning that game at Anfield against Liverpool. I mean, that would have given them so much, even though it was a long time ago now, that would have given them so much confidence that, you know, they can go all the way. And I think that, yeah, like you said, the injury to Timo, or the injury, the transfer of Timo Werner to Chelsea, not having him available, I mean, that's absolutely massive. I mean, he is their star man and their inspiration going forward, and against an Atletico defence, which is, even though they weren't the best defence in La Liga, they are probably still the best defence in Europe. So I think that, I favour Atletico for this one, definitely.
Yeah, seven wins and four draws since the return of the season, and their only loss coming in the Madrid derby, their last loss coming in the Madrid derby to Real Madrid 1-0, and that was back in February. So certainly a team on very good form, and a team that performs well for Simeone. So before we let you go, where can everyone find your work, Carlo?
Where can you find my work? Well, probably best to go onto my Twitter, account, which is at Carlo Garganese. And I tweet quite a lot at the moment, and you'll find all my work on there.
Fantastic stuff. Again, Carlo, thank you for coming on the show and joining us and helping us break down the Champions League. And we look forward to having you back on the show very, very soon.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks, guys. All the best.
And special thanks again to Carlo Garganese for joining us on the show. Make sure you check out his Twitter handle to catch up on everything he tweets about. He does a fantastic job. Rob, we've got some great matches of the week coming up. We still have the MLS tournament. Obviously, we're kicking into Europa and Champions League play here. So let me give you some matches to follow this week. In MLS, on Wednesday, we're going to have our semifinals with Philadelphia and Portland playing at 8 p.m. on Wednesday and Orlando, Minnesota playing at 8 p.m. on Thursday. In the Europa League, Rob, we have Inter Getafe on Wednesday at 3 p.m. playing their second legs, and Sevilla Roma on Thursday at 1 p.m. And the Champions League, as we had mentioned earlier, Friday matches, Juve Lyon, Manchester City, Real Madrid, those are Friday at 3 p.m. And Barca Napoli, Bayern Munich, Chelsea will be Saturday at 3 p.m. Make sure you catch those matches as well as we get into the quarterfinals and start to close out the Champions League play. So, Rob, you had the honor of trivia, my friend. Could you repeat the question for everybody?
Absolutely. So AC Milan, with their 35 goals, have the record for the most, not records, but hold the most goals since the restart of the top five European leagues. Can you name the other two to make that top three?
So, you know, like I said earlier, I think this type of question favors the Italian teams. We've made a big deal about Atalanta approaching 100 goals. They fell just short. It does concern me that they lost 2-0 to Inter because they didn't score any goals in that last match. But I'm going to give you Atalanta as one of the teams.
They are not. It is not Atalanta. In fact, you're only going to name me one Italian team.
Okay. I'm going to go away from that for a second because I want to give you then the non-Italian team that I think. And I think this is close. You know what? I'm going to change my mind. I was going to say Bayern Munich, but I'm going to go to Manchester City.
With their 34 goals, they are second place for most goals since the restart.
Okay. See, I was going to say Bayern Munich because they won a lot of like 1-0, 2-0 matches. They were dominant overall but didn't score a ton of goals. So the other team is an Italian team. And with that in mind, let's go to the Capo Cannonieri. Let's go to Lazio.
It is not Lazio.
Wow. I'm going to have to give you one more. I don't think it's Inter. You know, Napoli didn't score a ton of goals, in my opinion. They did score a few. You know what? Let's go with Roma.
It is not Roma.
All right, then I'm going to give you Napoli, and then I'm going to let you give it to me.
It's not Napoli either. So, wow. In order, it's AC Milan with 35 goals. Uh-huh. It's Manchester City with 34. You actually got the last one, Inter Milan with 32
it
goals.
It was Inter. See, I didn't think it was Inter, but... Wow, that is an amazing stat. Do you have how far Atalanta was on that list? Or
I don't. I only have that. This is a tweet from ESPN FC. and they only mentioned the three teams with the most goals since the restart. So, unfortunately, I don't know.
Very, very interesting.
But it must be close.
I would imagine so. I'd have to go back and look at that. But, we had a great close to the season. Just an amazing run. I was going to say Bayern Munich, Rob, on the answer, but I changed it to Manchester City because in my research for the Champions League stuff, I saw that, City played, of the last five matches they played, three of those teams were relegated and none of them were higher than 13th. And they won a lot of 5-0 matches in that run. So that's what led me to say, maybe it's City, and said it was like last second. And that's why I switched my answer, but great stuff. Great question. So, Rob, without anything else on the plan, let's hit the closing music, my friend.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. So, for episode 292 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Carlo Garganese for joining us. Next week, we're off. We're on vacation for a week, so we'd ask you to definitely enjoy the Champions League and Europa League matches. When we get back the following week, we will definitely discuss a lot of that. So, for episode 292 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.